Welcome to the Horses and Life podcast. I'm going to try to keep this intro pretty brief here. It's a busy day. I had a few horses to work this morning, and I've got some people coming here in just a few minutes, so I wanted to sneak into the office and get this done so I could get this out. I think the last time I did a podcast and checked in with you, I had a clinic about ready to start in Kansas City. Clinic went great. It was at Hidden Hollow Equestrian Center in near Kearney, Missouri, and now owned by my friends Jeff and Teresa Schlager. We had a very exciting first day with a lot of horses doing a lot of things, and it definitely got better and got smoother each day, so that's good. You guys did a good job riding there, the guys that came. And we had some fresh cows to work every day, so that was fun. It's good to catch up with some of the people here in my home area that I don't get to see as often anymore. My mom rode there all 3 days at the clinic. She's the one that first put me on a horse and got me into this mess, so it's nice that I can help her a little bit now with her horses. So after that, I went to Texas and worked some horses there, did a podcast interview. We had a clinic there. It was a good clinic, small clinic, but it was good. We had a dressage trainer there. It was her place that we did the clinic at, and it's always good to see the trainers come in and want to learn. She had an interesting horse that we got to learn a lot with. Two interesting horses, actually, that both of them made some good changes, and it's really good to see the trainers like that are interested in learning and get out there and want to better themselves and want to add some tools to their toolbox. So good job to you guys. Next clinic will be May 7th in Newville, Pennsylvania, the Dublin Gap Ranch. I'll be flying back out there a few days to work some horses, check on some fencing projects, and then we'll squeeze in a clinic while I'm there as well. So that'll be Tuesday night, May 7th, 5:30 p.m. So you guys can bring a horse, or you can just come and audit. A couple days after that will be Thursday, May 9th, 5:30 p.m. at Delta Q Stables in Smithville, Missouri. And that'll be the last clinic that I'll do here in this area for just a little while. So hope you guys in the Kansas City area can make it to that. It cooled off a little bit today, but it feels pretty good out there still. I've got my friends up in Wisconsin. They got some snow about a week ago. My friends in Canada are expecting more snow, I think, today or tomorrow. And I may be taking a quick trip up there at some point soon. So since the spring is coming and the snow is still around but starting to go away, I thought I would talk about Costa Rica today. So the interview you're going to listen to today is with my friend Jorge. And I recorded this back in January when I was in Costa Rica. I don't know if there's a lot I can say about Costa Rica that you guys haven't already heard if you've listened to the previous episodes of the podcast. But for those of you that haven't, I'll just kind of give you a quick synopsis of what happens when we go down there. So I fly down there and I organize the trek for other people to come along. From anywhere in the world, you can fly into Costa Rica and join us. It's about 6 days long usually. We spend a couple days at the ranch getting to know the horses. They have horses provided there. And most of the horses I've already known, I've ridden them and used them on other treks, and some other trainers and clinician type people go down and work them as well. And they do treks like this too. This is a business that he has down there. From people, a lot from the United States, some from Canada, will go down and do these kind of things. So we spend a couple days at the ranch getting to know the horses, riding around there, clinic in the arena for a couple days, then we ride on the ranch a little bit, and then we'll haul the horses in a trailer over to the beach over in the Nicoya Peninsula on the Pacific side, and we'll spend a day riding around the beach, and then we ride from one town up the beach to the next town, and the van takes all of our luggage and things, so we don't have to pack everything on the horses, but we do get to ride along some of the most beautiful beaches in the world. And some of them are very secluded. Some of them have a few people. It's a great experience. Food is wonderful. People are wonderful. And first time I went, I was not sure what I was getting into, but had a great time. And definitely feel like it's one of those once-in-a-lifetime experiences that everybody that's interested, hopefully they can take part in at some point. I've been lucky enough to be able to go a few times. So anyway, it's kind of a vacation mixed in with some equine education, and I'm there to help people with their horses and we all try to have a good time together. I'm not exactly sure on the dates when we're going to have it next, but it will be probably December 2020. That's probably what we're looking at. So we have a little time to get the details worked out, but if you're interested, make sure you are on my newsletter list. You can do that through my website. You can also send me an email, cal@calmiddleton.com, if you have any other questions. His business is SabaneroHorseVentures.com, and we'll make sure that we put a link up there on the website so you guys can check that out. Probably won't see my name on there right now. There'll be other treks with other people, but mine will get up there later once we have the details worked out. So anyway, thank you to those of you who are supporting the podcast, especially those of you on Patreon supporting it financially. And if anybody has any suggestions or questions or feedback, you can always send me an email and let me know. If you have somebody you think would be a good guest for me to have on here, I'll be happy to take your thoughts into consideration and look into it. If I don't see you guys at a clinic sometime soon, send me an email and let me know if there's anything I can ever do to help you with your horses. So without further ado, I bring you my friend, Jorge Soma. Okay, here I am with my friend, Jorge. Jorge, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Hello, Carl. Morning. Pleasure to be here.
So we are outside in beautiful Costa Rica. You guys are going to have to bear with us a little bit if you hear a few extra sounds and things. I think we got the things that were in our control under control, and then we'll go from there. So, Jorge, I call you Macho now most of the time because I've been around your friends and family that call you yeah. Macho. I got to meet you first as Jorge. But tell us a little bit about you and what you're doing down here. You grew up in Costa Rica?
I did, yes. I was born in the Central Valley, which is the main city of the country. My family has always been related to ranching and horses, and I've always been a big fan of horses and cattle. So yeah, that's my story.
That's your story. Now, you had a grandfather, you had both of your grandfathers were involved in ranching, you know, one in the Guanacaste region and the Pacific side, and one over on the Caribbean
side. On the Caribbean side.
And both had cattle and horses. And our grandfathers knew each other, we found out, after you and I met. And that's a pretty cool story. Yeah. Of course, you know that story, but I'll kind of go through a little bit of that for the listeners here that haven't heard that. But I was down here my second time, and Jorge took me over to his grandfather's on the Caribbean side. And we were there, and started a colt that morning and messed around there, and then we kind of got done. And I remember leaning up against a post while we were all just kind of talking under the barn, and your uncle said, let's go down to the house and have lunch, and that was pretty cool. Beautiful place, big lake overlooking everything, beautiful part of Costa Rica. And we got to talking about cattle, and your uncle said, oh, we had Brangus cattle also. And you said, oh, yeah, Cal's grandfather was involved in the Brangus breed. And then we started kind of talking a little bit, and then your uncle said, well, wait a minute, what was your grandfather's name? And about that time, it clicked in my head that I remembered my grandfather's stories from going to Costa Rica. And I'd kind of almost forgotten that he had been here and how that all worked. But I remember there was a little footstool that you put out in front of the chairs that we had at our house that was from Costa Rica. It was at my grandparents' house when I was a kid. And I remember them saying that's where it's from. Anyway, your uncle said, what was his name? And I said, Jesse Doughty. And he said, well, I don't remember the names really, but the man from the Brangus Association that came down here, he wore a tan Stetson, and he wore like tan khakis a lot. And I said, yeah, that was my grandpa.
That's him.
And your uncle said, you know that post you leaned up against earlier? Your grandfather leaned up against the same post 50 years ago. And I thought, wow, that was pretty cool.
That right? was something, huh?
Yeah.
So, and then we found some records of some cattle,
yes,
remember?
Yes. Yeah. We went back to the house. Your grandfather had a record book there, and they looked almost just like mine. Grandpa's would have been. Of course, you know, any good cattleman has good records. There were some bulls and some cows that their genealogy traced back to cows that my grandfather had raised and bulls. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So there were some saddlebags there at the house that day. You were telling me about the saddlebags.
Yeah, we call them alforjas.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us about that. That's what you used to take every time they went from, kind of forgetting the story now, but you always had those saddlebags because the groceries, everything was in there.
Everything
there
was
no automobiles.
No automobiles.
Could go there.
And the only way was to take the train for a few hours, and then the ranch hand, you know, Roberto is his name. Actually, he still works at the farm, you know, after 60 years or so. And he will wait at the train station with the mules and all the saddlebags. And I mean, everything you were taking, it had to be on those.
On the mule.
Horses or mules, correct. And then from the train station, it was about 3 hour ride. And you had to be ready for rain always at the Caribbean, you know. And so you had to have your raincoat and cover everything.
A beautiful country. Beautiful country.
Beautiful, beautiful. Caribbean, it's amazing. It's so biodiverse, Costa Rica, you know. You drive a couple of hours and you're boiling like we are now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, it's hot.
And today. Then you can drive 2 hours towards the Central Valley here, and it's already, you know, much cooler. And then you have the rainforest, you have the dry forest. So it's a very biodiverse country.
The cows down here are pretty tough.
Yes.
Those cows we worked today. So we gathered up today around 400 head Brahma cattle on your father-in-law's ranch. Sorted some bulls off, sorted some pregnant cows, dry cows, and then some cows with calves, and moved them here and moved them there. I couldn't keep up. It's one thing when you show up on a ranch, you're trying to learn what's going on. You don't know which pasture's which. You've never been there before. And you don't know what the plan is. Then there's another thing when you don't even speak the language everybody's saying. So I'm just kind of in the back going, you guys point and I'll go somewhere, you know. But it's great. It's pretty cool seeing that group of cows. We've got some pictures I'll put on the website so people can see. When we got done, we trotted. How far was it when we left the little corral all the way to the house? A few miles. A
few miles,
yeah. We trotted. Those cows trotted the whole way back.
Trotted the whole way.
Because they just left their group, and we didn't want to give them a chance to kind of walk or turn and stop.
You got to keep them, yeah, going, 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 so they don't jump. He was telling me, actually, when we were on the way, I hope there's not too many people on the road, because sometimes they see a guy there, they get scared, jump the fence. And that's it, you know, just leave them there and try it another day.
Oh, I can imagine. No, they did good. There was a few people there, but they kind of stood still and we got to go by them. Yeah, it was really cool. Those cows travel well. They're sound. They're good movers. They have to be down here in this part of the state, you know, or this
big,
part of the
big
country.
Big pastures, yes.
Yeah. Now, over in the other part of the country, there's some more Angus type cattle. There's some shorthorns, things like that.
Yes. Mainly because, you know, here it's too hot for...
A lot of Brahma here, Zebu.
For the Bostaurus, you know, it has to be
Bostaurus,
Indicus.
Bos Indicus, that's correct. Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's switch gears for a minute. Your family, still, you and your wife and kids, you have great family. I've got to hang out with all of them over in San Jose is where you live for the most part, but you guys are over here a lot too, because Melissa's family's over here in the Guanacaste region. Your ranch that I come down to and work your horses at is in the Guanacaste region too. So you guys get to go back and forth some. But back home, tell us about the greenhouse, what you guys do back in San Jose.
Yes, mainly...
For your real job.
Yeah, exactly. My most of the time job is growing flowers. Actually, I go potted plants, like the whole spring bulbs, hyacinths, tulips, lilies, and all those crops. And I sell to all the mass market stores, like Walmart and other local mass market stores. And yeah, I've been doing that for, I started with that business since 2009. But at that time, I was still working full-time at a big flower company. I worked there for 10 years, started when I was 22. And when I was 32, I decided to make a move and put my own business and handle my own time and that's actually how later the horse stuff of the horse trekking and tourism that we'll talk later about it. But that's how it came in. You know, I was, I now can use my time however I want it.
Sure. You can get away a little more often.
I can get away.
I know how it goes.
A little more often and for longer periods, you know.
Sure. You can get away more, but you have more work sometimes when you're home.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's easier to get the check, you know.
Yes, I understand. I understand completely that self-employed thing and how that works. So, yeah, let's go ahead and talk about that. So, it's actually kind of interesting. You and I have been on very similar paths before, way before we even knew each other. In a way, both of us, of course, grew up going to grandfather's ranch and horses and cattle there. And then both of us are still involved in it, but in a little more of a... I would say a little more of a hobby way as far as I'm helping people with their hobby. Now I get to help people with practical things, people that work on ranches and they actually use their horses for a real purpose, I would call it. But then I did a lot of show horses for a while and I still just do help a lot of people that are just in the pleasure riding for fun. And of course you now are on a path still kind of using some of your grandfather's places and you know, some of that, and you have your own horses there and you do a lot of what you call tourism. Now, right? Yes. For people like us when we come down. So tell us a little bit about your treks and how that started and what you do there.
Yes, basically it all started back in 2000, 12, I think it was. And a friend asked me to help her because she had a group coming. She was doing some, you know, we call them treks. And, you know, we go from point A to point B. We go across the mountains and down to the beach. And so she was doing a trek, and her husband got a job in India or something, and they were leaving. So she asked me to help her because she needed somebody that knew about horses and also speak English and could take care of a group of people. And she thought of me. So I went on it and I really like it. It was more in the Central Pacific, even steeper hills. And it's not as hot as here, but hills are steeper. Anyway, we did that. I really like it. And it was a very nice experience. And then she went to live in India. So this lady was coming again and she asked me, you know, since she's not going to be here, can you take us? Can you do it? I said, well, yeah, we'll do it. So I got a group of horses and we got everything set up and I changed the location. You know, I say, I can for sure do it, but I'll do it in my area, you know, where I know the area and all of that. And that's how we started. We ended up going from all the way from Nicoya, where the ranch is, all the way down to Coyote Beach. So we do about 80 kilometers.
That's a big ride.
Yeah, it is. And of course, we break it into several days. We take it easy. We have to enjoy also the beach and all the beautiful things to do in Costa Rica. And from there, it's just keep growing, you know. And then this lady contacted me with another person. And so, but it all started because of my passion or my seek of good quality horsemanship, you know. And that's why I started looking to learn from guys like you and many others. And that's how the whole idea took shape, you know.
Yeah, so that brings us right into the next thing. So the treks that we do here, or that you do here, that I've been a part of some, it's really important that the horsemanship is a big part of that. It's not just come and ride a horse on the beach on a vacation and pay to ride the horse like some places. It's a little more like, you know, we're going to help you learn a little bit about horses, teach a little horsemanship. You have other trainers, clinicians, whatever you want to call them. You have other professionals that come down, bring some people for their own. And then you have some people that come down that they're kind of like, yeah, I'm not really so interested in getting a lot of instruction. I just want somebody to kind of help me a little bit. And then they go ride on their own and do that. And that's kind of correct. A cool trek as well. So we met through our friend Fawn.
Fawn, yes.
Yeah, and Fawn Anderson. The first time she was coming out, I met her in Florida a few years ago. And her husband were coming down. I don't think they were married yet at that time, but her and her husband were coming down and said, oh, you ought to come with us. It's a great time, Costa Rica. And I'll be honest with you, at that time, I don't know if I could have known exactly where Costa Rica was on the map. You know, I just kind of was like, okay, sure, whatever. I'm not sure about that. And then next thing you know, I'm going to have Jorge call you. I said, okay. So I get a phone call. Hey, Cal, this is Jorge from Costa Rica. I said, oh, okay,
yeah, I remember that moment, yeah.
So, you know, and next thing you know, yeah, you ought to come down. It's a beautiful place. We can go ride, you know, meet people and ride horses and help me with some horses. Oh, okay, so here we are. Right? Yeah. So this is my fourth time down here now, I think.
And yeah, it's been
great. My friend Ricky came the first time. We had a great trip. So yeah, we had no idea what we were getting into, but man, we had a beautiful time for sure.
Yeah, it was a fun trek.
So we were just talking about maybe the next trek, we may do something a little different. We may try to get a little ranch work in there involved. In the past, we've done a little bit of riding on the ranch for a couple of days, kind of a clinic for a couple of days, get everybody to get used to their horses, get acclimated to the horses, and I kind of help them a little bit. And then we go start riding, mostly head towards the beach and ride up and down the beach. And then we ride from one place to the next, up to the next town. And yeah, it's a really fun ride. But we were thinking about maybe next time doing a little more ranch work there over here on your father-in-law's ranch, and then staying close to a beach the next day and going there for a couple of days. So that might be something different to do. Give people some cattle.
Yeah, I think it's going to work out pretty good. Yeah. You know?
We'll check it out and we'll keep you guys posted on the dates and kind of how all that works out for sure. So you got introduced to some of this horsemanship through quite a few different people. I know you had Chris down here some, and you've had some other people in and out. And it seems like there's a lot of people that are interested in trying to do the right things by the horses. I guess we can say the traditional Costa Rican or Central American, a lot of the horse training is not quite the way we try to do it in the horsemanship today, but there's a lot of people still in the traditional way here on the ranches that they're trying to do good by the horses and they're trying to get along. They just kind of have their way of doing it. And we got to see some of that today, but we got to ride some of those horses and they all ride pretty good. You know, you go out and move them around and they do kind of good stuff, you know. Tell us about the Costa Rican horses that you have.
Well, the most common breed here is the Criollo, you know, C-R-I-O-L-L-O. When you say Criollo, most people think of the Argentinian Criollo or something like that. And it's not really that. It's the local name. It's Caballo Costarricense de Paso, which means Costa Rican gated horse. And that's what most of the people want and like here, is that gated horse prancing and dancing and parades. Horse parades are very popular. Well, you've been there. It's crazy, you know, 3,000 horses.
It was a little crazy.
Going through town, you know, all doing their dance.
It was a little crazy. So, but it was entertaining. I'll say that.
It is. It is. So that's the most popular breed here. And then, of course, you know, there's a lot of quarter horses, Spanish horses, Lusitans. But mostly the Costa Rican gated horse is the by far the most popular breed here. It's a very, how you say, hot-blooded horse.
So you have a stallion at home. He's still a stallion.
He is, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what? He's more of a Spanish horse.
He is a purebred Spanish horse.
Yes. And that's the same as saying Andalusian, or is that a little
different? That's the same, yes.
Same thing,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, correct, correct.
He's a nice horse.
He's beautiful.
I worked him a little bit when he was just a yearling, or maybe a two-year-old, but he wasn't
He was a
big.
Two-year-old, yeah. I think. And now he's quite big and ready to ride.
How many horses did we have there at the ranch that we worked the other day with your family there and everybody?
Here in Nicoya?
Yeah. Uh-huh, in Nicoya.
Around 50 head.
Yeah, there's a lot of horses there.
Too many, yeah.
Too many.
I tell my dad he has to get rid of some.
There was a time he told you to get rid of some too, though.
Yeah.
I think I remember hearing a couple of those stories.
Yes, yes. So, my grandfather in the Caribbean side was the same. When my grandfather passed away, we counted like 84 horses.
It's a lot.
Yeah. They like to breed them and they don't like to sell them. So they have a problem there.
Yeah, it's kind of a problem, but it's not a problem as long as you can feed them, take care of them. It's no problem at all.
You have the land, yeah.
Yeah, that's no problem. Yeah, it's kind of good. So it seems like as we go through Costa Rica, you know everybody we stop to see. Now, some of that was by design because we're going to the places of people that you knew. But I know when you started that, you had to have just... You're just the type of guy that can go somewhere and you, hey, there's a property that looks like on the map. We could ride right through here on our trek to go from this part of the country to the beach. So I'll just stop in, talk to the rancher, say, hey, we're going to ride through. Can we stay here? That's something that most people around here are pretty okay with, things like that.
Yeah, Costa Ricans are all really friendly people, you know. So, yeah, I've made a lot of good friends already during these treks. And that's a very nice part. Too, and you know, and that's a very nice part of the experience, is making it, it's a really authentic experience.
Have a lot of things changed in that sense, as far as since you were younger and you were riding horses on the ranch here? It seems like, are there less people making a living off the land than there was, or is it still a lot of people making a living on ranches here?
Oh, I think there's less people making off a living and less people wanting to work on the fields, you know, and especially Costa Rica has become a very technological country, you know, like we have Intel, the one that makes the microchips, and a lot of medical companies. You know, we have Costa Rica has offered very good labor, bilingual labor and qualified labor. As more and more jobs are available on that, you know, people don't want to go work in the field. You know, they'd rather work on a call center or in one of these big companies. So yeah, there's way less people.
Kind of the same everywhere, yeah. It seems like. So you learned English in school when you were younger?
No, I learned English when I was already like 17. And that's how I learned about quality horsemanship too.
That's right, that's right.
Because I just got out of high school and, well, for different reasons, my dad wanted me to go out and see the world a little bit. I didn't want to.
Yeah, yeah.
And then here comes this cousin and he talks to me and he says, hey, you know, I heard you really like horses. I said, yeah. So if you really want to learn something interesting, you come over here. So actually, I got to see Ray Hunt.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
was
you
really
got to ride
amazing.
Ray a little bit.
I just wish my English was better.
Right.
But anyway, you know, it was still amazing because we got to see Ray like after 2 weeks I was there. And I was really hooked, you know. And it was about that time when he said, hey, this is my last word to you in Spanish. Suerte, which means good luck, you know. And it was a tough month.
That was Ray that said that.
No, I mean my cousin.
Oh, your cousin.
Because I didn't speak any English.
Oh, I see. I see. Because he goes,
this is my last word because you're not going to learn English if I keep talking to you in Spanish.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yes, yes.
So he said, good luck. And he did, man. And it was difficult. I couldn't even ask for the bathroom. And he would be in a corner there laughing at me. But that's how, you know, in about 3 weeks, I could understand. And in about 5 weeks, I could speak. And that's how I learned my English because... Yeah, I never learned in school.
Your kids learn it in school now.
They are. My kids, they all are in a French school, so they all speak French now. And now they're going to get the English. But, you know, the English, they will pick it up easily, you know. And Lucia, my oldest daughter, she already speaks some
English. She speaks good English with me. Well, the others a little bit too. The little one.
The other ones can, I can say a few words, but they will. They will soon.
It's funny, the little one, she came over the other day and she said she had something for me and she handed it to me and she says, this is for you, but she said it in French. Oh. Because, you know, she knew I didn't speak Spanish.
Exactly.
So she was trying to figure out what was going on, right? And she handed it to me and said something in French that I didn't understand. Then the other girls told me that, oh, she said, this is for you. And she handed me like a little pin or something she found, you know, it was just funny. But she already knew that something was different, you know.
Yeah, it was in Spanish.
Yeah, I remember the first time I went to your house to visit. She was probably three or maybe two. Yeah, two or three. And she was trying to talk to me. She even would sit on my lap and she would talk and talk and talk and talk in Spanish.
Yes.
And so every time she would say something, I would look up at you guys to kind of get a translation.
Correct.
And she kept kind of grabbing my face like, no, look at me. Why do you keep looking away? I am talking to you, not them. It was so funny because she couldn't quite figure out, why do you keep looking away? You know? And I wouldn't answer her and she didn't understand why. But now she understands a little bit.
Okay, a little bit,
now
yes.
It's a different language, so she tries to speak French. So that's great. So that's a good step.
That's a good one, man.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So what's the future look like for you? You've got some more treks lined up. Your greenhouse is growing. Got
yes.
a lot of things going there. The kids are growing up, of course, you know.
Yeah, kids are growing up. And yeah, the greenhouse business is stable, not growing very much, but it is stable. And of course, I'm trying to move more towards the trekking and horse and tourism business. Probably in about 10 years or as soon as I can, I will like to come live in this area here on the Pacific, on Guanacaste. But I have to wait for my kids to be a little bit bigger because they don't want to come here. See, they don't want to live here. They want to live in the Central Valley. My sister is helping me in the greenhouse business. So now I really have a support there and I can live and she can take care of things and so I'm leaving more the greenhouse business to her and I'm trying to get more of my time into this new venture.
So tell me about the schools, Daniel. We talked a little bit today. We met one of the, I guess I can call him a kid. He was 18 or 19, but he was working there and he's been working there since his father manages the ranch there that we were on.
He was
today.
Born there. Yes.
He was born there. And he goes to the Costa Rican public school. And they've been on a hiatus for a little while. They've been shut down over some strikes and taxes and things like that. So some of the public school kids are kind of out for a while. And the private schools are still going. And you said yours was a little bit of each.
Yeah, because they are in a French school and it's like an agreement between the Costa Rican government and the French government. But it's also, it has a private component to it. So what I'm saying is that some of the teachers work for the public sector, and some of them come from France. So those are the private teachers, and they are paid by the government of France. So they have nothing to do with that. So yeah, it was kind of funny because, you know, all of the public sector were not showing up. I mean, they were not off school, but they had a lot of lessons lost.
Some dead time in between there where there was like,
they were happy about it. They just had longer recess, you know?
Makes sense. And in the long run, they'll probably be okay. They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Know? Some of the kids that are struggling in school, that probably jars with them a little bit more than yours, you know, that are seemingly moving forward all the time. So yeah, it's kind of tough. So it's interesting to me to see the different schools everywhere I go and the way the schools are, and some are public, some are private. And yeah, it's a lot different. The education system in the U.S. obviously has some good things about it. And there's some things that are not as good, you know, I think. Do a lot of the schools here, like the private school or the semi-private school that your children go to, do they get out quite a bit? Do they do some hands-on stuff in the community, things like that? Or is a lot of them do.
You know, again, there's a lot of variation on that. Some do. Some are more like bubble, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a lot of like right now they're on a, still on vacation for winter?
Yes, we have like it's actually the summer.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, so, yeah, this is summer vacation.
I know it's winter for you.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's the driest period, especially here on the lowlands of Guanacaste. But here we have schools are off by the end of November, and they go back the beginning of February, and then we have another long recess in July.
Yeah, so it's just kind of the opposite from ours. I mean, ours isn't what we call the summer. June, July, August, they're off, and then there's a little break, December, January. But yeah, so you guys are on your long break right now. So that's why the kids are here. They're over at the beach today.
So. Yeah, actually, my nephews are in an American school, so they are on that schedule. So, you know, my kids, they are on vacation. My kids say, hey, how come they're on vacation? I say, well,
we don't know.
They were going to school when you were on vacation. But yeah, it's funny because they kept their system.
Huh. Interesting. Even though the weather's totally opposite.
Exactly. Even though it doesn't make much sense. But
yeah, it works. So we were talking a little bit last night just about things changing. Of course, I don't have children. You know that. But things are just changing so much. When you and I were in school, and you and I are the same age, I think. I'm 36.
Similar. Yeah, I'm 38.
Just a couple of years.
Very similar.
Yeah. So basically, when we were in school, we didn't have cell phones. We couldn't talk to our friends and stuff. We might call them on the phone, of course, but there was no communicating.
Yeah, and when you call them, you got to say hello to the father. Hey, mister, right. Can I talk to my
That's
friend?
Right. You have to learn those skills there.
Exactly. You have to talk to the father and ask him to.
And then I'm sure your father was like mine. And if the kids didn't say it just how he wanted, they might not get to talk to us.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Who's this? You know, you got to be polite, you know, whatever the deal is. And your children are very polite whenever I'm around, and they always seem to be. But I know there's a component to that is text their friends now. They don't learn some of that stuff. You were just kind of talking about the boys texting girls texting boys already. They're young, and they don't even, you know, the stuff that they would never say in front of each other, but they're just saying it through the phone. And that's just
it's easy through the phone. Huh?
Yeah. That's just has to be something that parents are dealing with all the time and trying to navigate. Hey, this is real life. This is on a phone. This is social media. This isn't real. But then that is part of their real life, right? Because that's how they communicate with their friends. And there's a lot to that. And it's the same everywhere in the world.
It is. It is. It's changing so fast, you know, and it's putting up new challenges, you know.
That's kind of helped your greenhouse business and your equine tourism business, I would assume, though. The social media, the stuff like that. I mean, can you imagine the guys that were trying to do that tourism 40 years ago, trying to get people to come down here and take stuff? I mean, it's almost, I mean, how do you do that, you know? It has to be a whole different program. So, okay, so we'll wrap up here. I'm going to ask you one more thing. I'll kind of throw this on you. I know Jorge does a good job of speaking and he's comfortable with things. I didn't really prep him or anything. I just kind of said, hey, let's just sit down and talk. He said, what are we going to talk about? I said, I don't know. We'll figure it out. But there's a point where when I have some guests on and when they reach a certain age, I might ask them this. And you're just over that age, I think I'll ask you. But anybody younger than us, I don't think we're going to ask them. Maybe even younger than you, we won't ask them. But what I want to ask you is, what is there that you can tell a group of younger people that you think is important they need to know, whether they have a young family like you do, whether they're somebody like me who's kind of just out there working, doing their thing and trying to be a great uncle and things like that, whether it's about family, whether it's about your career, your life, what is it that you can offer? I know the Pura Vida is a great slogan down here that I love.
Yeah.
I've kind of adopted it with some people that understand it. I go back and forth, but that seems to be a lot of the attitude down here. Tell me a little bit about what there is that you can say to people and about just going on, being happy and doing their thing.
Yeah, I think besides the Pura Vida style, you know, it will be to keep in contact with the nature and animals. And I think that will keep you away from a lot of troubles, you know, just like sports and nature.
Okay, well, Macho, thank you very much for being on here and we'll kind of get you on here again sometime.
Thank you, my friend.
Adios.
Bye.
If you're enjoying the Horses and Life podcast, there are many ways you can support it. You can obviously tell people about it. You can tell your friends about it. You can share it through social media or any other means. You can go to patreon.com and support it financially. There's a little more information on my website about the podcast. Also on my website, calmiddleton.com, please be sure you sign up for my monthly newsletters through my email subscription list. Until next time, enjoy each day.